Hello and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks. I'm Alex Linder. I'll be your host. You can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com, also at alexlinder.com eventually. Today we're going to do the rest of Chapter 3 of Abir Taha's Nietzsche, Prophet of Nazism, The Cult of the Superman, Unveiling the Nazi Secret Doctrine. It's going to be pages 53 to 64, which is a blank page, so it's not going to be too long. But it's loaded with thick, good stuff. B, the will to power as self-overcoming, the Superman, and four epigraphs to a piece from Hitler and Nietzsche. Nietzsche, life itself told me this secret. Behold, it said, I am that which must overcome itself, again and again. Then Hitler, life is will to power, and satisfaction is an eternal self-overcoming. And Nietzsche again, I teach you the Superman. Man is something that must be overcome. Friedrich Nietzsche. Man is something that must be overcome. And then Hitler, finally. The Aryan is the Prometheus of mankind, from whose bright forehead the divine spark of genius has sprung at all times. Creation is not yet at an end. Man has to be passed and surpassed. A new variety of man is beginning to separate out. Man is becoming God. Man is God in the making. God in beasts. This is what our world is made of. Again, Adolf Hitler. And now, God has died, end quote. Now we desire that the Superman shall live. And that's Nietzsche. Nietzsche's death of God, far from representing the destructive nihilism of a crude materialist, is instead a deeply spiritual event, announced by a true believer in human perfection. Indeed, only by repudiating the existence of a transcendent God, that'd be the Christian God, and the promise of perfection in the beyond heaven, Christian heaven, can the higher man again be resurrected as Lord and Master of the Earth, as a Superman, a God-man, who symbolizes earthly perfection and mankind's new and highest, yet attainable, goal. For man cannot endure life without giving it a meaning. Quote, if a goal for humanity is still lacking, is there not still lacking humanity itself? And again, quote, I teach you the Superman. Man is something that should be overcome. And all these are footnoted copiously. She footnotes. That's Nietzsche, of course. I teach you the Superman. Man is something that should be overcome, said Nietzsche. By calling for a better humanity, Nietzsche thus becomes the prophet of the Superman as the meaning of the earth. That's in quotes, meaning of the earth. The Superman is the meaning of the earth, says Nietzsche. The projection of the will to power. A humanly conceivable, humanly evident, humanly palpable, all that in quotes, goal that can become reality through man's creative will and not a mere fanciful supposition. Quote, God is a supposition. Could you create a God? Could you conceive a God? So be silent about all gods. But you could, surely, create the Superman. Once you said God when you gazed upon distant seas, but now I have taught you to say Superman. The beauty of the Superman came to me as a shadow. Ah, my brothers, what are the gods to me now? Therefore, to Nietzsche, life's highest purpose and the noblest manifestation of the will to power is man's self-overcoming. Life itself told me this secret. Behold, it said, I am that which must overcome itself. Again and again, life is overcoming. For Nietzsche, the Superman should rule the earth, for he represents a higher species of man. He is the purest, the strongest, the Roman Caesar with Christ's soul, who embodies human perfection, for he combines the conflicting yet ideal elements of the Apollonian and the Dionysian. Being, quote, artist, creator, saint, lover, and philosopher, knower, in one person. The Superman has an aristocratic view of the world, which consists of a totally different set of values, and is against all that is common and egalitarian. Here, only a small number of people fit into this radically elitist concept of the Superman. Indeed, self-overcoming, and consequently the creation of the Superman, is only reserved for a select few and remains an impossible goal for the vast majority of men who, Nietzsche argues, have no inherent worth. Nietzsche does distinguish between quantity and quality and is in favor of the latter. Hence, only by dedicating itself to the promotion of a higher species can ordinary humanity give a meaning to life. Not mankind, but over man is the goal. That's a direct quote from Nietzsche. With the outbreak of National Socialism in the early 1920s, the Aryan becomes the higher man, the best potential candidate to fit Nietzsche's status of Superman and rule the earth, for he is the source of all creativity and greatness in the world. Adolf Hitler thus asserts in Mein Kampf, the Nazi Bible, that, quote, all the human culture, all the results of art, science, and technology that we see before us today, are almost exclusively the creative product of the Aryan. He alone was the founder of all higher humanity. He is the Prometheus of mankind, from whose bright forehead the divine spark of genius has sprung at all times. If we were to divide mankind into three groups, the founders of culture, the bearers of culture, the destroyers of culture, only the Aryan could be considered as the representative of the first group. According to Hitler, the Aryan is the best physically and morally. You find in him this, quote, magnificent alliance, the most splendid physical beauty, with the shining spirit and the nobility of the soul. This man, conscious of the greatness of his soul, feels supreme pride. The Aryan is the best actually, but that, for the Führer, is not enough. We must create the Superman. Like Nietzsche, Hitler is convinced of the general mediocrity of the human species. Therefore, he argues, man must, by a constant effort of creative will and the elimination of all moral barriers, overcome himself to produce a higher humanity, for life is will to power, and satisfaction is in eternal self-overcoming. What could be more Nietzschean? Asks Taha. The Nazis sought to create, biologically and morally, Nietzsche's Superman. Hitler's ultimate aim was, in fact, quote, to perform an act of creation, a divine operation, the goal of a biological mutation which would result in an unprecedented exaltation of the human race, and the apparition of a new race of heroes and demigods and godmen. And the Aryan was the most eligible candidate to fulfill this divine role. It was from the ranks of the SS, an order apart, a modern knighthood chosen by different and higher standards than those of the regular army, and inspired by the ideal of the Superman, who was originally, quote, the God-man and the Christ-man, that the God-man was supposed to appear. It was from the ranks of the SS that the God-man was supposed to appear. The SS Superman was a god in the making, embodying the mystical motto, as above, so below. Nazi occultists, claiming that the Aryans were, quote, the sons of the sun, the sons of the gods, the supreme manifestation of life, unquote, held that the word race was derived from rata, an Old Norse term meaning root, the fact which proves that God and the Aryan race were identical. The Superman being mankind's highest purpose, the living incarnation of the will to power, it follows that life as such, i.e. the will to power, is a process of eternal creation, a perpetual self-overcoming, a process which transcends mere self-preservation and self-mastery to mean man's actual self-sacrifice in order to produce something higher than himself, the Superman. Indeed, in contrast to the Lockean Hobbesian tradition, Nietzsche thinks of the law of life not as self-preservation, but as self-overcoming. Instead of the liberals' question, how may man still be preserved, Nietzsche asks, how shall man be overcome? Self-overcoming also involves self-mastery. Men are classified according to their ability to control their own weaknesses and desires. Quote, the most spiritual men, as the strongest, find their happiness where others would find their destruction, in the labyrinth, in hardness against themselves and others, in experiments. Their joy is self-conquest. Asceticism becomes in them nature, need, and instinct. Man should be the master, not the slave of his passions, and they are his tools for greatness. Yet self-overcoming for Nietzsche, as well as Nazism, transcends self-mastery to mean the spiritual overcoming of the human, all too human, condition of man, i.e. the creation of, quote, something beyond man, the godlike Superman. This definition goes well beyond Walter Kaufman's narrow analysis of Nietzsche's notion of self-overcoming as mere self-control, refusing to see in the Superman anything more than, quote, the man who has mastered his passions. So the Jewish translator of Nietzsche is wrongly, in any case, or dishonestly stinting Nietzsche's actual meaning for overcoming. It's literally overcoming the species, not just overcoming the individual, but to create a Superman. Not just mastering your passions, as would be the classical Greek or even Christian idea of the reason being the rider on the horse of the passions. Creating the Superman is indeed a near impossible mission reserved for the very few, for it involves self-mastery and a Spartan-like hardness on oneself and on others. All praise to what makes hard, said Nietzsche, adding, I do not praise the land where butter and honey flow. But most importantly, self-overcoming requires a readiness and willingness, if not a strong desire, to sacrifice oneself for the sake of the holy cause of producing a higher humanity, and herein lies the real test of greatness for Nietzsche. Quote, I love those who sacrifice themselves to the earth, that the earth may one day belong to the Superman. I love him who wants to create beyond himself and thus perishes. Only by, quote, going down does man go beyond. Those who make history are the strong, distinctive characters with higher ideals and an enormous ability for self-sacrifice for the sake of such ideals. What Nietzsche means by self-overcoming, therefore, goes far beyond Kaufman's superficial and narrow definition of self-mastery. Proclaiming the creation of the Aryan Superman as its ultimate aim, National Socialism praised self-overcoming as man's noblest goal, stressing on the need for sacrifice, struggle, success of a sacred yet dangerous mission, man's ultimate utmost loyalty to his huge task, in order to reach this stage of perfection. Thus spoke Hitler, quote, creation, if not yet an end, a new variety of man is beginning to separate out. Man is becoming God. Man is God in the making. The Führer considered that this new and higher breed of man was to emerge solely from the Aryan stock, for not only was the Aryan best equipped, spiritually and biologically, to become this Superman or God-man, but also in him was most strongly developed, quote, the first premise for every truly human culture, namely the sense of self-sacrifice, the self-overcoming will. The Aryan held, quote, a heroic worldview inasmuch as he sacrificed individual benefit for the good of the whole world, willingly subordinating his own ego to the life of the community, and, if the hour demands, even sacrificing it. And that ends B section. Section C, which is the last one in this chapter that we'll conclude with, is the will to power as the drive for conquest and domination, war as higher life affirmation. Again, a bunch of epigraphs here. First, Nietzsche. The magnitude of a progress is gauged by the greatness of the sacrifice that it requires. Humanity is a mass sacrifice to the prosperity of the one stronger species of man. That would be progress. And Hitler. Life is an eternal struggle, a world where one creature feeds on the other, and where the death of the weaker implies the life of the stronger. That is the basically aristocratic principle of nature. The victory of the stronger over the weaker as a means to breathe life as a whole towards a higher level and as the precondition for all human progress. Aristocratic principle of nature. And again, Nietzsche, you should love peace as a means to new wars, and the short peace more than the long. I do not exhort you to work, but to battle. I do not exhort you to peace, but to victory. May your work be a battle, may your peace be a victory. You say it is the good cause that hallows every war. I tell you, it is the good war that hallows every cause. War and courage have done more great things than charity. And from the SS Creed of Combat, the SS man's basic attitude must be that of a fighter for fighting's sake. He must be unquestioningly obedient and become emotionally hard. Nietzsche again, life is a scaffolding by means of which a select sort of being might rise to a higher sort of task and a higher sort of existence. Finally, Hitler, the progress of humanity is like climbing an endless ladder. It is impossible to climb higher without first taking the lower steps. The will to power is a matter of overcoming. Overcoming morality, overcoming oneself, and overcoming the others. Power, for Nietzsche, means self-perfection as well as the domination of the weak by the strong. It thus transcends Walter Kaufmann's own narrow definition of Nietzsche's concept of power, which, in his analysis, is nothing else but peaceful, harmless self-perfection. Nietzsche, in fact, explicitly and specifically defined the will to power as follows. Quote, life itself is essentially appropriation, injury, overpowering of the strange and weaker, suppression, severity, imposition of one's own forms, incorporation, and, at the least and mildest, exploitation, because life is will to power. The aforementioned statement leaves no room whatsoever for controversy over its interpretation. Nietzsche simply and actually meant what he said. So when he affirms that, quote, society has never regarded virtue as anything else than a means to strength, power, and order, he is equating the will to power with domination, conquest, struggle, war, exploitation, cruelty, slavery, and hierarchy. The Nazis, too, saw in force and power the motive element in history and acted accordingly. Life was nothing else but a drive for conquest and domination, struggle, exploitation, where only the strongest survived, the weak ones being eliminated by it. According to Hitler, all development was struggle. Only force ruled. Force was the first law. Christian love, compassion, and peace had no place in a Nazi's dictionary. The Nazi commandment was, when someone smites me on the cheek, this is a quote, I do not turn the other cheek, nor do I put up my fists. I strike with a thunderbolt. Inherent in Nietzsche's will to power theory, which the Nazis espoused, is the justification, or rather the glorification, of war, a pivotal theme in Nietzsche's philosophy. Quote, you should love peace as a means to new wars, and the short peace more than the long. I do not exhort you to work, but to battle. I do not exhort you to peace, but to victory. May your work be a battle, may your peace be a victory. You say it is the good cause that hallows even war. I tell you it is the good war that hallows every cause. War and courage have done more great things than charity. Nietzsche saw that the future of German culture rested with the sons of Prussian officers, the Junkers, showing utter contempt for the principle peace and letting other people alone, and asserting instead that to dominate, Herrschen, and to help the highest thought to victory was the only thing that could interest him in Germany. Deeply imbued with Nietzsche's philosophy, Nazism, which was from the beginning a fighting movement, shared his veneration of war as higher life affirmation, as the highest manifestation of the will to power, stressing on struggle, conflict, fighting, discipline, courage, obedience, the holiness of heroism, as shown by the SS motto, quote, the SS man's basic attitude must be that of a fighter for fighting's sake. War, Hitler believed, is the natural order of things. It is the great purifier, man's natural state. Mankind, quote, has grown great in eternal struggle. History is a perpetual and merciless struggle for life. Therefore, to the Führer, he who wants to live must fight, and he who does not want to fight in this world of eternal struggle does not deserve to be alive. That was the aristocratic principle of nature which the SS adopted wearing with pride the Totenkopf, Death's Head, as a symbol of their willingness to give and take death unhesitatingly in the holy cause of National Socialism. The impressive, astonishing show of strength at the Nuremberg rallies, where hundreds of thousands of black steel-helmeted SS soldiers gathered in perfect discipline to prepare for war in a quasi-religious ceremony in veneration of Mars, the Greek god of war, prompted an observer to make this interesting comment. Quote, "If a modern ritual magician of the utmost expertise had designed a ritual intended to invoke Mars, he could not have come up with anything more effective than the ceremonies used at Nuremberg." Nietzsche would certainly have praised this Nazi glorification of war, for the SS soldiers were, quote, "selected by standards of which Nietzsche would have approved, and inspired by the vision of war and service to the warlike state and leader which he advanced." Here it is worth noting that war, for Nietzsche and the Nazis alike, means something higher than aimless bloody fighting. It is rather a spiritual war, even a holy war, those are in quotes, undertaken for the sake of the noblest mission on earth, namely the breeding of the Superman. Thus spoke Nietzsche, "My brothers in war, let your love towards life be love towards your highest hope, and let your highest hope be the highest idea of life." And it is. Man is something that should be overcome. It is, therefore, a teleological war, and the fighter praised by both the Nietzschean and Nazi doctrines is not a simple soldier with no specific cause, as Nietzsche points out when he says, "I see many soldiers, if only I could see as many warriors," but rather a knight, a noble warrior, with a keen sense of order of rank, guided by honor, not interest, whose loyalty and obedience stem from his firm belief in his holy cause. Quote, "My brothers in war, if you cannot be saints of knowledge, at least be its warriors. They are the companions and the forerunners of such sainthood." We are reminded of Plato's noble class of guardians, the knights of knowledge, in charge of protecting the, quote, "good order," established by the philosopher king. The SS, like Nietzsche's warriors, were no simple soldiers. They were political soldiers, involved in ideological combat while conquering and colonizing lower races. They were fighting monks, quote-unquote, engaged in a crusade for the supremacy of the superhuman Aryan master race. Their sense of loyalty to their sacred mission was legendary, as shown by their motto, "My honor is loyalty," which closely fits Nietzsche's following commandment to his brothers in war, quote, "To rebel, that shows nobility in a slave. Let your nobility show itself in obeying. Let even your commanding be in obeying. To be a good warrior, thou shalt, sounds more agreeable than I will." Thus, according to Nietzsche and the Nazis, any war undertaken in the holy cause of producing a higher humanity was considered a holy war, and the spiritual warriors engaged in such a crusade were hence justified in doing whatever they thought necessary to fulfill their sacred mission. Indeed, for Nietzsche, the higher and the terrible man necessarily belong together, being a synthesis between the Superman and the, quote, inhuman. Therefore, the acts of such higher creatures could include, in the least, the domination and exploitation, or even the extermination of the weak, quote, subhumans, a perfectly natural behavior that was sanctified by the, quote, aristocratic principle of nature. Equal to the unequal, unequal to the unequal, being the true voice of justice. Nature, which found its highest expression in the will to power, hence sanctioned human domination, and accordingly, any attempt to protect the weak or the helpless was considered immoral because it was unnatural. Hitler's attraction to Nietzsche's warlike creed was clearly reflected in his own worldview, which praised the, quote, basically aristocratic principle of nature, unquote, of the victory of the stronger over the weaker as a means to, quote, breed life as a whole towards a higher level, and as the, quote, precondition for all human progress. Hitler, a neo-Darwinist who believed in the natural law of selection, in the survival of the fittest, saw life as an eternal struggle, quote, a world where one creature feeds on the other, and where the death of the weaker implies the life of the stronger. Yet who was nature's favorite child, the strongest, the fittest, on whom providence had conferred the master's right? To the Führer and the Nazis, it was none other than the Aryan, the Prometheus of mankind. They considered that the Aryans embodied the unique mental, moral, and spiritual hardihood and dynamism found in Nietzsche's Superman, which entitled them to rule over all non-Aryan, lower races, such as the Celts of Alpine race, the Slavs of East Baltic race, an offshoot of the Alpine race, and the typically Semitic Jews. Race superiority was indeed the kernel of the Nazi ideology on which the new order in Europe and the world was to be based. The master's right also entitled him to exploit, i.e. enslave, beings of the lower order. Nietzsche and Hitler, in fact, called for a new slavery, quote-unquote, for they believed that the highest type was possible only through the subjugation of the lower. Quote, "We must accept this cruel-sounding truth that slavery is of the essence of culture." Nietzsche asserts, "The vast multitude of worthless, natural-born slaves must labor in order that a few masters, born leaders, may lead an existence devoted to beauty and art, to the good and the true, to human perfection. For the Nazis, the Jews, Negroes, and Slavs were the natural-born slaves, the typical Untermenschen. They had no right to live except as servants of the culture, servants of the culture-creating Aryan master race. Indeed, Hitler saw in slavery a precondition for the formation of higher cultures. Quote, "Without this possibility of using lower human beings, the Aryan would never have been able to take his first steps toward his future culture. Sowing the seeds of greatness thus involves, if not requires, hardness and even cruelty toward all that is weak and inferior. Become hard," Nietzsche entreated his brothers, the higher men, praising the proud Viking's hard heart, which rejected the great nausea with man, the great pity for man. Cruelty is necessary for producing something higher than man, a task which, according to Nietzsche, requires the elimination of everything that impedes the progress of humanity. Quote, "Almost everything we call higher culture is based on the spiritualization and intensification of cruelty." The Nazi glorification of hardness of character expressed itself in the utterly contemptuous and ruthless mistreatment of racial inferiors by SS men, the finest specimens of Aryan superiority. At the Nuremberg Tribunal, the judges were horrified by the accused's total lack of, quote, "normal human feelings, such as pity or regret," when crimes were mentioned. Indeed, the majority of SS officers, quote, "had accepted a system of morality in which ordinary human feelings like conscience and compassion had no place. It was their duty to be hard. They boasted of their lack of feeling. They were beyond good and evil." Now let's see where that comes from. That's 107. Gerald Suster. And trying to see where. Well, I don't see where they're initiated. But anyway, that's his name, Gerald Suster, S-U-S-T-E-R, that quote about their being beyond feeling. It was as if the Nazis lived in another world, another order of things and of spirit, holding a totally different vision of the universe and a set of values transcending the conventional humanist concepts of good and evil. Were they Martians? They were simply Nietzscheans, quote, "powerful, masterly, cruel, and fearless, engaged in a sacred mission that should ultimately lead to the creation of the Superman, regardless of the human sacrifices it entailed." Nietzsche, in fact, believed that, quote, "the great majority of men have no right to existence, but are a misfortune to higher men," stressing on the need for a doctrine, quote, powerful enough to work as a breeding agent, strengthening the strong, paralyzing and destructive for the world-weary. "I teach that there are higher and lower men, and that a single individual can, under certain circumstances, justify the existence of whole millennia, that is, a full, rich, great, whole human being in relation to countless, incomplete, fragmentary men. The real issue is the production of the synthetic man. Quality matters, not quantity. Nothing should stand in the way of the perfect man, the whole man, even if it means the elimination of millions of worthless, wretched, uncreative, fragmentary lives." Quote, "The magnitude of a progress is gauged by the greatness of the sacrifice that it requires. Humanity as a mass sacrificed to the prosperity of the one stronger species of man, that would be a progress. Showing absolutely no consideration for the miserable masses, Nietzsche combines the eugenicist idea of, quote, breeding the most splendid types with the idea of the selective extermination of human, quote, failures. The higher men must, quote, gain that tremendous energy of greatness in order to shape the man of the future through breeding, and, on the other hand, through the annihilation of millions of failures. No statement could be more Nazi than the aforementioned one, says Taha. Nietzsche thus becomes the prophet of racial supremacy, that of the master race, or the, quote, aristocrats of blood and spirit, and the, quote, preacher of death for the Slavish Untermenschen, as shown in this flagrant declaration. Quote, the earth is full of those to whom departure from life must be preached. The earth is full of the superfluous. Life has been corrupted by the many too many. The weak and the failures shall perish, and they shall be given every possible assistance. The Nazis only had to put Nietzsche's prophecy into practice. Guided by an unshakable sense of mission, the SS, as sons of the gods, that's a direct quote, thought they had the legitimate right to enslave or kill any racial inferiors who stood in the way of the Superman. To Himmler, quote, what happens to a Russian, to a Czech, does not interest me in the slightest. Whether or not 10,000 Russian women collapse from exhaustion while digging a tank ditch interests me only insofar as the tank ditch is completed for Germany. Losses were never too high in the Nazis' view, for, quote, the tragedy of greatness is to have to trample on corpses. Indeed, life, for Nietzsche, was, quote, a scaffolding by means of which a select sort of being might rise to a higher sort of task and a higher sort of existence, a view shared by Nazism's equally, radically, aristocratic worldview, which taught that, quote, the progress of humanity is like climbing an endless ladder. It is impossible to climb higher without first taking the lower steps. And that ends chapter 3, and I think that's pretty darn straightforward, that everything can be sacrificed in order to bring about the overman, the superman, the supreme race of men. And that's what Hitler and the SS set out to do, is Taha's argument in a direct line from what Nietzsche believed in and stated. I want to thank you for being with me today. And I'll be back with you again real soon, and we'll pick up with chapter 4 of Abir Taha's Nietzsche, Prophet of Nazism.